Phil, one of the big issues in the presidential campaign was border security, ending the influx of criminal illegal aliens into the country. As we look at President Trump's first couple of weeks in office, Phil, it appears that he's willing to use every lever at his command in order to try and bring about that security.
Yeah, one of the day one actions was reversal of essentially all of the Biden executive orders related to immigration and the border and reimposing the Trump policies from his first term. And there was a pretty immediate effect to that. If you look at the daily numbers of border encounters, they basically collapsed, from hundreds or even thousands a day to, dozens. I mean, they're in the double digits, basically. So the message has clearly been received on the other side that there's not much sense in crossing the border. You're not going to be allowed to stay with the end of catch and release. And he's also, by using his tariff threat, he's got Mexico to deploy significant additional resources to their side of the border, as well as Canada. And so, there are also significant deportations already going on, particularly of criminal illegal aliens. And we saw the spectacle of Colombia saying they wouldn't accept criminal illegal aliens back into the country, and then Trump threatened him with a tariff, and the next day they said, okay, send the planes down, we'll take them. So I think on border policy in particular, it's been a totally successful 180-degree reversal from what Biden was doing, and we've now got kind of Trump policies back in place, and their first term Trump plus more. Clearly, even just the perception that there's no sense in coming in because you're not going to be allowed to stay, I mean, that could be enough to have a huge impact on the whole issue because the arrivals have gone way down.
Now, tariffs, of course, are not necessarily the best tax or economic policy. However, Phil, we've really seen President Trump use that as a bludgeon here in order to achieve other goals. Have we really seen a president do that before?
Well, Trump did it to a certain extent in his first term, although nothing like this. I mean, he spent like years building up to it and threatening it and before he actually did. This time, it's like he issues the order and it's happening tomorrow and then, okay, I'll give you 30 days. So he's definitely using the tariff threat as a weapon to extract foreign policy concessions on other issues. And that is something we saw in the first term, that he used to get European countries to spend more on defense and meet their NATO obligations by threatening tariffs. And he used it with Mexico before for border issues as well. Look, if it's used as a threat and it extracts other policy concessions, I can see the benefit there. But I really do worry about the economic impact of these policies if they're actually put in place for any significant period of time. Particularly, what I was really concerned about coming out of the campaign was that there was going to be a big tariff on Canadian crude oil because that would have a major impact on the price of the pump for Americans. And that would be highly economically disruptive to household and business finances if that hit. And so we pushed. In the first couple of weeks, I pushed very hard with all the people I knew in the Trump administration to say, hey, if you do the tariffs, you've got to exempt crude oil. Do not whack crude with tariffs. It'll have a really negative impact. And we weren't quite successful. They did not fully exempt crude. But when the 25% order went out for Canada, they had a 10% rate on crude. So they gave it a lesser rate, I think, because of the objections that we and other groups raised in terms of the impact that would have on Americans. And of course, now the whole thing's been delayed 30 days. And so we'll see. And maybe it'll be delayed again. And it'll just be used as kind of a threat that hangs out there. But I do really worry if these tariffs go on, that they could be painful for American businesses and consumers in terms of the price impact. And so, that's the push and the pull of this. If it's used as a diplomatic tool, maybe it can be a positive, but it's not very good economic policy that actually takes effect.
The other area where President Trump is really barring in here, where other presidents have talked about it, but he's actually having an impact, he wants to really root out the deep state and cut the regulatory state down, putting Elon Musk in charge with the new Department of Government Efficiency. Well, we've seen quite a freak out on the left over this, have we not?
Well, I think that's how you know that it's effective, is that they're absolutely squealing. They're totally out of control. And of course, among the day one executive orders, Trump had a a federal hiring freeze, a federal back-to-the-office order, a regulatory freeze. He reversed all of the anti-energy regulations, including the electric vehicle mandates and the home appliance mandates. And he also had, you know, withdrawals from multiple international agreements, specifically including the Paris Climate Treaty, which has a big impact on all of these domestic regulatory actions. And so, you know, there's a big sort of big bang from the first day in terms of deregulation. But, you know, we've seen that a lot of times. Presidents will come in, they'll state all their policies and executive orders, and then, you know, it takes a long time for anything to actually happen, to work through the bureaucracy. That's not what we're seeing this time. This time we're seeing not just signing paper, but immediate aggressive action, kind of being spearheaded by Musk and Doge. We've got this deferred resignation offer where anyone who, you know, basically every federal employee was told, look, if you stay, we expect you in the office every day. We expect you to work hard. We expect there to be standards of conduct and of effectiveness. And, you know, this is going to be a really serious, high-intensity job. If you're not okay with that, we're going to pay you through the end of September, but then you leave. Let us know. And that's actually kind of a generous offer, if you think about it. It would pay through September. But it also sort of sets the tone because, look, if you don't take the offer and you don't meet our intense, elevated expectations, you're probably going to be laid off, and then you'll get nothing or a much lesser compensation package. And of course, we're also seeing Musk take on, in particular, USAID, which is an agency that overwhelmingly was spending money on, you know, left-wing crackpot things, which I think are very difficult for the left to defend. So that was a good strategic choice of targets. And now he's got his team starting to look at Medicare payments, which I assume they're going to find vast amounts of fraud and abuse in that. And, you know, the left is going crazy, and they're saying, oh, my God, Musk wasn't elected president. It's like, well, okay, but Trump was. And all of the paper, all the memos, everything that's going out has Trump's signature on it. He agreed to all of this. He's the one doing this. And kind of the point of what he's doing is he wants the bureaucracy to actually be accountable to the elected president, not to be a permanent fourth branch of government. And, of course, if you are a beneficiary of a left-wing permanent fourth branch of government, that is a disaster for you, even though I think it's very good news for the American people.
Do you find it interesting here, Phil, that the left is having a fit about Elon Musk being given all this authority, yet they don't seem to complain about the fact that federal bureaucrats have been enacting and interpreting right. and adjudicating regulations for decades?
Oh, it's amazing. You know, I've been working 20 years on trying to restrict the power of the executive branch and put Congress into the decision loop by doing something like the RAINS Act, which we've talked about on your show many times before. And, of course, the Democrats have always been totally against it. They've been totally against any kind of meaningful congressional oversight of the agencies. Everything they've been for is, hey, you know, let the experts at the agencies, let the bureaucrats make the decisions. Don't have the political branch, don't have Congress involved. And now they're getting a little bit of taste of their own medicine with the president appointing someone to really, you know, reverse the direction on a lot of these policies that they loved when implemented inside the executive branch. Now they're being reversed inside the executive branch, and the Democrats and the media are going crazy saying, oh, my God, Congress needs to act. This is usurping power from Congress. And, you know, maybe we can actually get them to come to the table on forcing these major decisions into you know, congressional votes. And, you know, maybe we could say, okay, we're willing to submit deregulatory actions to approval in Congress, but you've got to agree to submit the regulatory actions also. And we won't have this pendulum that swings with presidential elections, and we actually will force Congress to actually vote on all the major policies for the country. That would be a great outcome. And frankly, they were never going to even consider it, and maybe they still won't, but they were never going to consider it until they got a taste of their own medicine. So I'm glad they are right now.
Phil Kirpin is president of American Commitment. Phil, as always, tell us a little bit about American Commitment. Also, where can folks find you on the web?
We're a national free market advocacy group. We work on all the fiscal, economic, and regulatory actions, and we try to find the issues that are on the margin, where if we can get people a little more information, they can maybe make a difference in a big congressional vote or in a regulatory action at an agency. So we've got a lot of letters in our action center. You can send as is or edit however you want, and we'll make sure they get delivered. And all our stuff is on AmericanCommitment.org. And then I should also mention the other group that I work with, Unleash Prosperity. We do a free daily newsletter that a lot of people really enjoy, and it's read by a lot of media and political figures. If you want to get that, I do that with Steve Moore and John Fund and a few other people. That goes out every weekday. It's free if you want to get that. It's unleashprosperity.com. And if you want my absolute up-to-the-second thoughts, I'm also a bit of an ex-addict, and you can get me on there. It's my last name, Kerpen, K-E-R-P-E-N.
Phil Kerpen of American Commitment. Phil, thank you for being back with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Loman. Have a good one.